Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Well Women Podcast. I'm Dr. Laura.
And I am Sam.
Today, I thought it'd be a really good idea to talk about something that I think we've both been seeing in the news. I've seen on Instagram, Facebook, and it's really kind of everywhere, activated charcoal.
Yeah, this is a topic that we are all very familiar with, I feel. We've probably all seen those videos on Facebook of people brushing their teeth with the black stuff and then having these super white smiles. And I'm not gonna lie, I did that myself.
Did you actually?
Oh yeah, I made a huge mess. Don't recommend it for like white sinks. But anyways, I wanted to talk to you about this topic because I want to know if this charcoal is actually safe. So can you walk me through what activated charcoal is and what is its intended use?
Yeah, so activated charcoal is an interesting thing because it's really kind of up and coming. And I've seen it in everything from like pizza crust to kind of face masks and things like that. And I think that when it comes down to it, I'm more concerned always about internal consumption of things like this. So that's what I'm kind of gonna start to go through first. So charcoal in itself is just burnt organic matter. So usually it's made from something like coconut shells, peat, or wood. And so what we're seeing and what we're consuming is not just charcoal, it's activated charcoal. So it can become activated when we expose it to certain gases at a high temperature. And we go through this special process, and this activation helps the charcoal to basically bind with anything it comes in contact with. So essentially, the way charcoal works is that it binds drugs or toxic chemicals, and therefore things can't be absorbed. So initially, it was actually used as, and it was referred to as the universal antidote, and it was kind of used for acute poisonings all the time. And so it was actually really funny. The first incident of activated charcoal was in 1811, so long time ago. And someone basically ingested charcoal alongside 5 grams of arsenic. And so they found that they could manage this acute poisoning by giving activated charcoal because it could bind the substance and it could make it therefore not absorbed by the body. So ever since then, it's been used to manage acute poisoning up until 1963, which, of course, we got kind of better at treating acute poisoning. We didn't need to give people all activated charcoal, but that's really what it was kind of intended for. And that's what it was meant for, is kind of getting things out and not allowing them to be absorbed. And so if we're looking, so for an example, if we're doing dosing for poisoning, for activated charcoal, adults and teenagers, usually it's anywhere from 25 to 100 grams mixed with water. And then children 1 to 12, it's usually 25 to 50 grams. And the dose can depend based on body weight. But that's kind of what it was. That's what its intended use was.
Oh, wow. Like how much has changed, eh?
Yeah.
So I just did a quick Google search. And basically activated charcoal, as you were saying, now we see it in skin cleansers, we have it for teeth whitening. It says it relieves diarrhea, gas, bloating, it rids bad breath and body odor, removes pollutants and grease from your hair, spider bites, cholestasis, a pregnancy, improves heart health, anti-aging, calming hyperactive children. And on top of that, Gwyneth Paltrow uses it in one of her lemonade drinks. It's the best juice cleanser. So of those 105 things I just listed there, are these real claims or what's going on? Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with kind of going through it all. I think that we live in a climate of detox being a hot word. So I think that people are really drawn to things that are going to detox them without really understanding what the processes of detoxification even mean. And so there's a lot of programs and things that are promoted as this will detox you. And everybody thinks, okay, if this detoxes me, then this is a healthy thing. And so when it comes down to that, I think we really just need to understand, first of all, what detox means. And we need to understand the fact that our liver is always detoxing us. So we're not, basically these detoxes kind of imply that we're not actually detoxing ourselves on a regular basis. And the only reason that you wouldn't be doing this is if you had basically liver failure or your kidneys weren't working, because those are the organs that are going to flush things out in terms of fluid and reabsorb things, and the liver processes everything. So I think that there's a poor understanding of what detoxification actually means. And so I think when we throw around using charcoal and this will detox your body and drop it into your smoothie to detox things, I think that we really need to understand what that actually means. And now that doesn't mean that when I'm giving a treatment plan to someone, I don't give things to support the liver, because I think that there are certain conditions and concerns, and especially when we're doing things like treating hormones and if someone's on medications that are already burdening the liver, I definitely do a ton of things to support the systems in the liver to kind of continue what they're doing or to function at a higher level. And I think that's fair to say. But I think when we throw around the word detox, I think it confuses people, because they think that my body's not detoxing, I must be toxic, therefore I need to detox. So, and I think when it comes down to actually being toxic, it's actually a whole other thing, because when we're looking at, like, let's say absorbing, I don't know, chemicals in our environment from plastics and all that sort of thing, a lot of those chemicals and a lot of those toxins we're storing in our fat. So when we're actually detoxing or doing a detox, we're not necessarily getting rid of those toxins. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, I feel like we're also scared of, it's such a hot topic, because when you hear detox, you know, like, everyone wants these toxins out of our body at all costs, you know? So something like charcoal that says it does everything and it binds to all these chemical substances, you know, we obviously assume that it's going to make us feel better.
Yeah, so, exactly. And I think that people are, there's a few things that I want to say with respect to that. So looking at the research in general, I actually went through and tried to comb through the research of activated charcoal to see what actually was out there and what was just kind of claims being made. And so charcoal, we can both agree that it has clear benefit of getting rid of medications that shouldn't be there. So if we're going to consume large amounts of arsenic, which I wouldn't recommend you do, then charcoal can probably get rid of it. And now, like I said, we have better medical kind of advances that have allowed us to treat acute poisoning and overdoses and things like that, that I do not think, I'm not an ER doc, but I do not think they use activated charcoal as their first line treatment in a lot of things. So that's just kind of anecdotal. A lot of that information is old historical kind of things, the way that charcoal used to be used. And so when we look at it from a medication standpoint, it was actually interesting that I found that activated charcoal actually has a limited effect on absorbing acetaminophen, also known as Tylenol. And so after 2 hours of an acetaminophen or Tylenol overdose, activated charcoal actually really didn't do much. So all this to say that sometimes it works with medications, sometimes it doesn't. But if you're in an acute scenario, you definitely don't want to be administering your own overdose treatment. Like, you definitely need to be going to the hospital and getting yourself treated in that way. But that's just to say, that's really a lot of internal activated charcoal. A lot of the research is just on overdose management, which I don't think it's appropriate to manage by yourself at home, obviously. So I think that from that perspective, it's kind of like, well, if the only research is telling us about things that we shouldn't be doing on our own, then maybe that's telling us something, right?
Yeah, definitely. I don't see myself using it.
No.
So, however, I have used it for tooth whitening. And I'm wondering, is this something that's safe for me to be using? I don't know. What does the research say on that?
Yeah. So I actually thought this was really interesting, because I thought, you know what, I've seen teeth whitening, I've seen charcoal toothpaste, I've seen charcoal toothbrushes. And so I was kind of looking into it, not really expecting anything to come out of it. And I actually found some really interesting research. So looking at charcoal toothpaste, first of all, some studies found reductions in cavities, but other studies actually found increased cavities. So I don't really know. Some of the studies that looked at the worst outcomes found that the reason they had worsened cavities was because some of the formulations of charcoal. So your dentist always tells you not to put rough things on your teeth, right? And so some of the formulations can actually or have actually been shown to be a little bit more rough on the enamel. So if we're more rough on the enamel, then obviously we're causing that abrasion, and with that abrasion probably opens our teeth up to more opportunity for bacteria to be able to lie and reproduce and create a cavity. So I think that's it. And I'm not a dentist at all, but like my dentist definitely tells me that anything that's abrasive on the teeth is going to, whenever we wear down that enamel, it's going to leave it open and vulnerable to something to grow in that crevice or that crease. So people who have more like ridgy teeth are probably more likely to get more cavities.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was actually interesting that one found it was good, one found it was bad. I don't know if it has to do with the formulation, if one's less rough than the other. But I'm not sure if it's the charcoal itself or it's the way they formulated it in the toothpaste, right?
Mm-hmm. And I didn't actually use the toothpaste. I just like took a capsule. And yeah, I just bought capsules from the grocery store actually. And I just put it in a jar and I just kind of dipped my toothbrush in it and brushed my teeth. And it was disgusting, to be honest with you. And it doesn't like it stays in your mouth. And I don't even know if it's like the whole trick that if you wear like a dark red lipstick that your teeth look whiter, you know, and it has a similar effect where like your gums are black before your teeth look really white in comparison. But
so teeth whitening trick is dye your gums black.
Yeah.
Like, and so not a good look. Where did you read to do that, though? I'm so interested.
I didn't read it. I saw it on, I'm probably pretty sure it was Facebook. So I think it was just one of those, like, scrolling down and, you know, like, it pops up. And they were just like, oh, buy this charcoal. Maybe it was Pinterest. But either way, wasn't a legitimate source. And it made a huge mess. Don't recommend. But
okay, so on the flip side, I've actually tried a charcoal toothpaste. So there's a lot of natural toothpaste that they've made with activated charcoal, and they actually taste like peppermint. So they don't leave a bad flavor in your mouth or anything. And they are super, super messy. Like your entire, when I've used the toothpaste, it's literally completely covering my sink is black. Like my sink is black. The counter is black. Yep. My toothbrush is black. You dyed it. It's like running down your mouth. It's like you're like drooling black. It's like staining your face. It's a lot. And so with these toothpaste, I think the thing that people like is that, number one, they don't contain crap that toothpastes contain, like fluoride and that sort of thing. Really, it's activated charcoal and usually peppermint essential oil or whatever else. There's a little bit of sodium bicarbonate. However, I don't really know. Like I said, the research is so mixed because I don't know if it's abrasive. And I honestly didn't use mine long enough because I kind of got fed up with the mess. Like I found the cleanup was enough that I was like, I don't really see myself doing this long term. So, and then another study that looked at it found no negative effects for oral hygiene in general. So one study found it improved or reduced cavities. The other one found it increased cavities. And another one found that it had no negative effects. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think if when it comes down to it, you should speak to your dentist, because if we're using something that's potentially abrasive and we're ruining our enamel, I mean, that's probably not a good thing at all.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about the toothbrushes?
Yes. The toothbrushes. This was actually really interesting. And I was kind of grossed out and pleasantly surprised with what I found. So
interested. I'm very interested.
Yeah, because do you know how disgusting your toothbrushes can be?
Oh, I've heard. I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
Okay. So I'm gonna tell you. Looking at regular toothbrushes, okay, so first of all, several studies have found that cariogenic, so bacteria that causes cavities, and periodontopathic, so basically anything that can, bacteria that can inflame your gums and things like that, like all the bacteria that's in your mouth, can be transmitted by means of dental instruments, dental flosses, and toothbrushes. Now, a toothbrush can harbor a variety of microorganisms, including bacteria, fungi, and viruses. And so specifically, I found two points interesting. Number one is that herpes simplex virus, so this is your cold sore virus, survived for at least 3 days on a toothbrush. And then we have another bacteria that plays a role in many different infections, digestive and otherwise, was found to survive 16 days on a toothbrush.
Cute.
They also found that brushes, so where do you store your toothbrush?
Oh my God, don't even.
Where do you store your toothbrush?
Oh my God, I store it on like the counter, just in like the jar.
So,
I don't want to know.
Toothbrushes stored in the bathroom are very likely to have fecal matter lingering on the bristles. Toilet flushing was shown to produce an aerosol spray of bacterium-tainted water, which can contaminate the bristles. And actually, that was found for about 2 feet surrounding the toilet.
Okay, that's what that taste was. I never could put my finger on it, but thank you for opening my eyes. So, okay, thanks for ruining my day. How do I avoid keeping my toothbrush, or how do I keep my toothbrush clean? What should I do other than store it in a drawer?
Yeah, so storing it away would be good. But again, we mentioned that there's other bacteria that aren't from fecal matter. There's other bacteria that are maybe if we had a cold sore and we brushed our teeth that week, it survives for 3 days on your toothbrush. So making sure that we can decontaminate it would be really important. A few studies have looked at microwaving their toothbrush and using ultraviolet light. So these are actually been found to be the most effective method to sanitize toothbrushes. But I don't really know the protocol. Like, I don't know what I would do if I was going to microwave my toothbrush. So
I was going to say, what does that even mean? Microwave your toothbrush? Like, put it on the popcorn setting?
Well, and also, I was also thinking when I was reading this that, okay, so a lot of toothbrushes, like, what else are they made of? Rubber, right? Like, rubber and plastic. So, like... I know.
This reminds me of our university.
I was just going to say this.
Where you put the juice box in the microwave.
Okay.
Sorry,
so,
listeners, if you don't know, do not put juice boxes in the microwave. There is
in all of them. We had gotten home. We lived together in our third year of university. We went to University of Guelph. Shout out to U of G. We went there and we had come home literally like stone cold sober one day. We were just going to have a snack or lunch or something. We were like, oh, we have this Tetra Pak of juice that we have in the freezer. I don't know why it was in the freezer and I don't know what kind of juice it was, but it was in the freezer. And so Sam and I said, you know what, let's defrost it. Oh, well, let's defrost it in the microwave. And we didn't realize that the inside of a Tetra Pak is like, is it aluminum or something? There's something in it that can't be microwaved. So we put it in the microwave. It starts literally sparking. Sparks are flying everywhere. And doesn't Sam bolt out of the house and leave me to go up to the microwave and physically turn it off? So you'll just know that who your real friends
are. I'm not
Ryan
when, die,
when a fire breaks out. So I think similarly, if you were to microwave your toothbrush, if we were to microwave our toothbrushes, you'd be gone. And I'd be left to put out the fire. So I'm not sure if that'd be a good idea.
Important note, like, I guess you shouldn't put your electric toothbrush in there. that would be right there.
I'd be like, that would be a really bad idea. So, yeah. So anyways, UV, I don't know if, like, I don't know how you'd clean it. Yeah. Maybe one of those. Yeah, like an autoclave machine. I don't know because of the other components in a toothbrush, like I said the rubber, the plastic, like what the end is made of. I don't know how you'd go about doing that. However, I've seen a sponge be decontaminated in a microwave, so I don't know.
Okay, so then do the charcoal toothbrushes that we were talking about before, are they less contaminated?
Well, okay, so the charcoal toothbrushes, basically, like you said, it's kind of like when you put the capsule on your toothbrush. They basically come with the bristles that are already in activated charcoal, so they're black, and basically they combine, so they blend the activated charcoal with whatever the bristles are made of when they're making it. And so, actually, a number of studies have shown that the number of bacteria on charcoal toothbrushes was substantially less compared with non-charcoal after 1 week of use.
Oh, I wonder where it's going.
That I don't know.
Interesting.
Or maybe
Pretty
people with
cool.
charcoal toothbrushes don't store their toothbrush beside the toilet.
Maybe not. Anyways, as far as digestion goes, on the bottle I bought from the grocery store, it said helps with gas and bloating. Is this
Oh,
true?
okay.
I
Yes,
always go by that. Yes.
the problem is that there isn't a lot of research when it comes to activated charcoal and digestion. So I'd mentioned at the beginning that activated charcoal was meant to be taken for acute poisoning scenarios. So it's kind of like, okay, so how is that working? What's that mechanism of action? So looking at the studies, two small studies were performed in the 1980s and the 1990s. They looked at whether or not activated charcoal supplements could reduce intestinal gas, and they excuse me, they both came to opposite conclusions. So one said they worked and one said they didn't. And some found that the treatment actually caused nausea and vomiting. So, I mean, if you have digestive issues and you want to take something to help, you obviously don't want it to cause nausea and vomiting.
Yeah, definitely. It seems counterintuitive.
Yeah.
How about the foods that are containing this charcoal nowadays? Like you mentioned before, there's pizza crust, there's yogurts, there's ice cream,
Yeah,
gelato,
it's
bread.
crazy. It's like we're in this kind of Instagram fad of wanting to see cool colored food, right? So we're dyeing it black by adding activated charcoal. And now it's interesting because the research in this area seems to be a little bit inconclusive. Like I mentioned before, there's a certain dose that we need to take when we're treating acute poisoning. And so most food applications that use charcoal are generally using very small doses. Like we mentioned how messy that toothpaste is. So you really don't need a lot in order to get a big color. So that's one thing, but it's really hard to know what's in your food or drink, like how much, because I don't think there's any standardization that I'm aware of in terms of
Yeah.
like
So it's
adding
more
it
like a,
to.
it would be like a dye, like more of a cosmetics.
That's what I'm assuming, and that's what I think they do in order to make like the black ice cream. I don't think they do it in a therapeutic sense because I don't know what the dosing would be on that. And I might be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know because I would imagine they're using it for the black color. Like when it comes to the pizza crust, are they basically advertising it as like a detox pizza? I don't think so,
Healthy.
but I don't really know. I do know, however, I've seen articles and write-ups of people recommending smoothies with activated charcoal in them, like a capsule of activated charcoal. So in that respect, that would be an actual therapeutic dose. And so those are the types of things I'm actually worried about. If you're going to get ice cream and it has a sprinkle of activated charcoal to make it black, I don't know that it's going to impact your health. But if you're having a smoothie every morning with activated charcoal, my first question is kind of why, right?
Yeah,
So
I'm gonna say
it's strange.
basically.
So yeah, and the main issues I find, so there are people who shouldn't have these foods. I don't know what the dose is, and I don't think it matters. I think that when we're on certain medications, we really need to err on the side of caution. So medications like antidepressants, heart medications, those are ones that I wouldn't want to mess with in terms of taking a food that could potentially stop the absorption of these medications. Another thing that people don't realize, birth control pills are impacted by a lot of things. So I don't know. I might be over kind of generalizing saying that, oh, don't eat black ice cream if you're on birth control pills, but I don't know. And that's the problem is we really don't know unless we got a full ingredient list that said, okay, this is the amount that we're putting in. And then we researched that amount and saw how much it absorbed. I don't really know, right? The other thing is, and I mentioned with the smoothies that people are putting capsules of charcoal in, is that people tend to overdo things that they think are healthy. And that's the bottom line. Like, how often have you been told to do XYZ for your health and you've just done it into overdrive and overkill because you're like, oh, this is healthy, so I'm going to do a lot of it.
My life.
So, yeah, and I find that happens a lot with like this celery juice craze, right? I find that it happens with a lot of things.
What's that? Celery juice?
Yeah, so
I want to
people
use
are just people are basically taking celery and they're blending, like they're juicing it or they're blending it and they're eating it every day because there's a famous Instagram account that's telling you that it's going to cure basically every problem you've ever had. And now on that note, celery juice does have benefits similar to like putting spinach in your juice and putting other greens in your juice. It does have benefits. There are, celery just isn't water. Like there are nutrients, there are minerals, there's good things to reduce inflammation, and a lot can be said for reducing inflammation. So I'm not going to discredit it in any way. However, a lot of the research, when we're looking at, just kind of going on a little bit of a tangent, when we're looking at celery juice in particular, a lot of the research is on the actual celery seed, the celery bulb, and the celery bulb, which is the celery root, and the celery leaves. So it's not necessarily the stock that we buy in the store that the research is based on for a lot of like neurodegenerative conditions and peptic ulcers and liver support and that sort of thing. Those really big benefits that we've seen with antihypertensives and things like that. A lot of the research is done with the actual celery seed, the leaf, and the root, not the stock. So it is important to know that. So it is, it's not a bad thing to drink celery juice, and celery juice is definitely has its benefits with inflammation and hydration and adding another source of nutrients and vitamins and all those sorts of things like you'd get from something like spinach. But I think that it's kind of been overdone in terms of its benefits. So I think people just do things because they think they're healthy. Some people will take it to try to reduce cholesterol, to activated charcoal. Now we're not on celery anymore, but with activated charcoal, some people do take this to try to reduce their cholesterol, try to help their bloating and gas. And it's important to understand that this isn't fixing any of your symptoms. So even if you did take that charcoal capsule that one time and it made you feel better, or you had an acute case of what you think was food poisoning in Mexico and you took charcoal and you felt better, that's fine, but it doesn't really get to the root of the cause. So when you take it every single day, it can actually be harmful. And so basically overall, what I would say when it comes down to it is that there's some side effects. So there's the side effects that people have actually reported with activated charcoal have been black stools. So your poop is black, which makes logical sense, but that's a little bit concerning. Like imagine you were taking activated charcoal every single day and then your poop was black and you wouldn't know if you had bleeding or anything in your stool because your poop's already black.
Yeah.
So
And
for people who take iron, their poop can also be black, but it's just hard when if your poop's always black, you don't really know kind of what's actually going on. And then also, it shouldn't be used if you have any gastrointestinal blockages or digestive issues, because activated charcoal can actually cause constipation. So it can actually do the opposite effect because of its binding properties. It can bind things too much and cause more constipation and more issues. And so, like I mentioned at the beginning, the word detox is too often thrown around. So when we're doing a detox, we're supporting our natural detoxification processes. And so, like I mentioned, these are substances that are going to improve our liver enzyme function, or they're usually liver and or they're cofactors that liver enzymes require to function properly. So I actually want to dive into detox a little bit now that we're on the topic. When we're talking about a detox, we want to do two things. And so a lot of people are put on these like cleanses and water fasts and all these sorts of things. Some of them can be beneficial. It can have merit. So I don't want to discount all of them. But I think the two main principles we're looking at when we look at a detox is, number one, is it needs to move your liver and it needs to move your bowels. So moving your liver, I mean, supporting the processes that we already do. So phase one and phase two detoxification, we're either adding in cofactors or we're supporting those processes altogether. And that's kind of what we need to do in order to move the liver. And then number two is moving the bowels. So if we're not pooping every day, you better believe we're not getting rid of anything that's kind of sitting around, whether it's toxins, whether it's old food, whether it's anything, whether it's inflammation. If we're not pooing, we're not getting rid of it. So I just mentioned that activated charcoal can actually cause constipation. So on that note, does that sound like it helps with detox? I don't really know. If it's not making you poo, if it's causing constipation, then that's not helping anything, right? And when it comes to hormones, and when we're kind of looking at it, whether you're on the birth control pill or whether you're trying to balance your hormones, when we have hormones that kind of hang out in our poop and we don't pass them every single day, our body says, oh, look, there's something helpful that I can use again. And it recirculates it and it uses it again. It's called enterohepatic recirculation. So when we do that and we use it again, then our hormones become harmful. So on the note of activated charcoal, if we're not moving things through because of the charcoal, then no, it's not detoxing. So that's kind of, that's that with detoxing. And then I found this interesting that as of June 2018, the Department of Health in New York City says that activated charcoal is currently banned from all food and drink serving establishments. And it was prohibited by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as a food additive or a food coloring agent.
Wow.
So,
that's
yeah.
A lot.
So I found that interesting because, like, it's banned in New York, but I've seen it in plenty of food in Toronto. So,
I just feel like there's not enough, from what it sounds like, there's just not enough research to,
yeah,
you know, support, contradict what it claims to be able to do, right?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of things, like, if we see them on Goop, like Gwyneth Paltrow's website, a lot of times we're inclined to try it, and everybody's looking for the latest and the greatest, and the thing that'll kind of be the magic bullet for their health, and I really don't think that it's activated charcoal, especially in like your smoothies or in a capsule form. I think that it actually can be detrimental because when we're stopping the absorption of things, we're stopping the absorption of potentially very important, and not only medications, but vitamins, nutrients, and we're stopping the absorption. So if we're having a jam-packed smoothie that has all the things we'd want in it, and then we throw in a capsule of charcoal, and it's kind of like in order to detox us, it's like, well, are we even absorbing anything in the smoothie? I don't know.
That's a good point.
So
Definitely.
I think that we need to really be careful, and we need to think twice when we look at adding in these sorts of things to our diet or to our smoothies. And again, like you're right, no research investigating the long-term use has been done. And that's both positive and negative. So it might be this amazing detoxifier at a certain dose, or it might be really good at this low level for X, Y, and Z. Do we know? No, we don't, because there hasn't been research long-term, good or bad, that I know of. So I think that when it comes down to it, I would just be very cautious and tread carefully whenever we're kind of looking at these types of products. And no, I'm not saying that don't ever go try the black ice cream at Sweet Jesus or wherever it is in Toronto. But I think that giving it a try is one thing. I think adding it to your healthcare regime is kind of a whole other thing.
Definitely. And that's why people should always seek out advice from professionals such as yourself when changing their diet or lifestyle at all, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that's it with respect to activated charcoal. Do you have any other questions or anything you wanted to bring up?
No, that's great. Thanks, Laura.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of the Well Women Podcast. I'm Dr. Laura.
And I'm Sam.
And thank you for joining us. We will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.